All right. San Francisco's own Dave Brubeck right there with the classic. And Paul Desmond, too. Don't forget about
That's
Paul.
Right.
And we're here today on the lunch special with Michael Rosenfeld, assistant professor of sociology, obviously in the sociology department here at Stanford, right?
Mm-hmm.
And let's talk a little bit about your new book, and let's see if I get this right. The Age of Independence, Interracial Unions, Same-Sex Unions, and the Changing American Family.
You got it. Full credit right there.
Now, you got your PhD?
Yep.
So is this what you got your PhD on?
You know, it's related, but a lot of people, the first book they publish is their dissertation. This is not my dissertation. This is a new project that I developed while I was at Stanford. It's a sort of a much broader thing than people usually do for their dissertation. I was trying to figure out, what do we really know about family change over time? Because everybody has the sense that the family is changing around them. Everybody has this, you know, people feel that there's a big change going on.
Mm-hmm.
Problem is that people always feel that way. You know, you go back in time, everybody seems to report that. Things are changing, you know. You hold on to everything that's fixed because life is changing around you. So the real question is, how do you begin to figure out what's really changing and what's staying the same?
Mm-hmm.
And one thing that's happened in the past 15 years or so is that we finally got access to census records from the past that used to be inaccessible. So now we can actually look at the census all the way back to the 19th century, and we can get a pretty good picture of what changes and what doesn't change over time.
Mm.
And that enables us to put into perspective things about the family that we were never able to put into perspective before.
How did these census figures get released, or where were they held up?
Well, the census records were always available, but they were paper records sitting in an office in Washington, D.C. somewhere. Somebody had to computerize them. That was the big thing. They had to go through, computerize it, turn it into one giant database.
You couldn't Google them.
You couldn't Google them. Or you could Google individual ones, maybe, mm-hmm. but what you really needed to do is load the whole data up and analyze the whole thing.
Sure.
And you couldn't do that until just recently. So there were a lot of basic things about the family in the past that we didn't know until just the past few years. I mean, if you go back to what people used to write about the family in the 19th century, the person they cited the most cited source, was Tocqueville. Tocqueville, this French nobleman, you know, who wrote Democracy in America, he spent 9 months in the United States, wrote a good book. Let's be honest about it. The guy wrote a good book. I don't want to knock him because his book's still in print 160 years later. And,
wow.
You know, I'd be lucky if, you know, mine's still in print in 10 years. But, so he was smart, but you have to rely on more than just one guy's point of view if you want to understand what was going on in the American family in 1840, let's say.
Mm-hmm.
With the census now, we can. And one of the things that I discovered studying the census was actually that the American family was a lot more stable, that the family system was a lot more stable in the past, even through the Industrial Revolution, than anybody imagined. So that actually helps us put these post-1960 family changes into perspective. And post-1960 family changes, I mean, later age at first marriage, the rise in non-traditional unions like interracial unions and same-sex unions. We have a more diverse family system than we ever had before. So my job is to try to figure out why.
So having studied the family, was Bill Cosby right when he made that statement last year and Michael Eric Dyson just tore him up for it? Where we're in the African-American community today, there's a possibility of somebody having sex with their grandmother?
I'm not familiar.
You didn't hear about that? There
No.
was a great debate about it, that Bill Cosby made some remarks in his speech that the family has gotten so torn up and so turned upside down and so convoluted that, you know, nobody knows who's who or what's what, and you know. And
yeah, well, I think there's a sense of disorientation. Some people have this sense of disorientation that everything's changing so fast, they don't know what's really going on. So that's part of it.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's also, and this is even more true in the black community than in the white community, there's a retreat from marriage in general. So people are not spending their entire adult lives with one other partner, which was sort of the idealized family of the past. So
that's not across the board?
It's even more so. I mean, there's the percentage of blacks, adults who are unmarried, is substantially higher than it is for whites.
Hmm.
Most white adults eventually get married. They don't necessarily stay married, but they eventually get married. But mm-hmm. the retreat from marriage is greater in the black community.
Hmm.
But it's a phenomenon for both. And I think, you know, we used to have a pretty firm idea. Young adults used to have a pretty firm idea of the family system they were going to end up in.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not as true anymore. And I think that does cause people some concern.
Talking to Michael Rosenfeld, assistant professor of sociology, and his new book, The Age of Independence, Interracial Unions, Same-Sex Unions, and the Changing American Family. This is heavy stuff. How long has the book been out?
Book's been out since, I think it's the end of March.
Okay. And published by?
Harvard University Press.
It, oh, not Stanford?
Not Stanford. Sorry about that.
What'd they think about that? Well, you got to go where you got to go, right?
Yeah.
What's been the feedback on it so far?
You know, it's interesting. I expected to be talking to people in the press about same-sex marriage because that's, you know, I talk about that in the book, and that seems to be, it has a lot of public policy relevance. But what I didn't anticipate is that there'd be a lot of stories about the rise of interracial marriage in the United States. And I think the main reason is that we've just passed the 40th anniversary of Loving versus Virginia, which is this 1967 Supreme Court decision that legalized interracial marriage across the United States.
Isn't that amazing? It had to be legalized?
In 40 years ago, in 17 states, it was illegal to marry somebody of another race. And what we've seen since 1967 is a pretty dramatic rise in interracial marriage. So now about 7.5% of marriages in the United States are interracial. Back in 1970, it was less than 1%. So there's been a steady rise of interracial marriage, and what kind of interests me is the way that the press has played this is kind of a feel-good story. And I can see the feel-good element of it, because it's true. In other words, we used to have a problem with race in the United States. Then we had the Supreme Court decision, and now we all get along. That's kind of the way they play it.
Oh, okay. So, I'm going for that.
Yeah, it's obviously a little bit of an oversimplification, but there's a grain of truth to it, which is that we do have a lot more interracial unions in the United States than we ever used to have, and that does promote, to a certain degree, a more understanding between the different races because we're part of the same family.
But if you ask those interracial couples, they'll tell you time and time again that it's not only not easy, but they catch hell more than anybody else. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. I've interviewed some people, for instance, who were disowned by their parents. People who, for instance, haven't talked to their parents in 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously, people do still catch hell. But that also has changed. In other words, I've also interviewed some people who said, well, at first, my parents were aghast. They were like, you know, how could you be marrying this person? You're going to bring this person into our family. We won't stand for it.
Mm-hmm.
But then the parents realized that the children are going to marry these people anyway. In other words, parental opposition doesn't have the force it used to have. If you're not living with your parents, then whether they think your boyfriend is no good or not doesn't have the same effect that mm-hmm. it does when you're living with them. You have to depend on them for food and shelter. It's a different system. And so what I find is that for a lot of younger couples, they report that the parents opposed this at first, and then the parents realized the kids were going to do this anyway. And then the parents came around. For most people, there's still opposition, and people still, you know, get sort of harassed by strangers from time to time, and certainly same-sex couples see this also. I mean, it's, you know, harassment by strangers is an issue that non-traditional couples face, but we do live in changing times, and so people know that grandma may not like it, but grandma doesn't make the rules anymore.
A lot of it depends on the neighborhood you live in, though, too, right?
And that's why people, you know, the historical trend is that people in non-traditional unions move to places like San Francisco, where they know they'll find community of like-minded people and less harassment. But one of the interesting things I found studying the census is that between 1990 and 2000, the urbanization of these non-traditional couples really declined, and that you find a lot more of them, you know, in rural areas, in the suburbs, in the Midwest, in all sorts of places where you might not expect to find them. And I take that as an indication that people's families are not driving them away quite the way they used to. In other words, it's still the case that non-traditional families are highly overrepresented in New York and San Francisco and Chicago and L.A., mm-hmm. and that may always be the case. But you actually see a reemergence of non-traditional unions in Des Moines and in rural Illinois and all sorts of other places. And I think that part of that is because the family system has become a little bit more tolerant not tolerant enough yet, but a little bit more tolerant than it used to be of this kind of transgression.
Has society evolved enough that this will survive, though?
Well, what you see is there's this huge generational gap. Mm-hmm. And so among the young, tolerance for non-traditional unions is almost universal. People don't have a problem with same-sex marriage and interracial marriage. I mean, if you ask young people, should interracial marriage be legal? Mm-hmm. Everybody says yes. In fact, they think it's a weird question because they can't imagine that it ever wasn't. Of course, they're not old enough to remember. Can't blame them for that.
Right. Same way we think about somebody had to legalize interracial marriage in 1967.
Yeah. Young people, of course, they can't imagine that it was ever illegal. So what you get is something that we, the social demographers, call demographic metabolism, which is the old folks may be against it. You know, the tolerance, for instance, for gay rights among people who are in their 60s and 70s is really low in the mm-hmm. United States. There's a lot of discomfort among your senior citizens with gay rights in general, same-sex marriage in specific. But among the young, there's a lot of tolerance. They don't really have a problem with it. And so what you see is that over time, the societal view on this issue really changes, and that's because the old folks, they die out, and they get replaced by these younger birth cohorts who were raised in a different time, who were raised in a way that makes them more tolerant.
And that's what's going to change society for sure, changing it now. And I guess your book is a real kind of looking at that whole, we're in a major change. We're in the middle of it right now, aren't we?
I think so. I mean, and one of the things that it's really hard to see as an individual is, you know, society changing around you, because your life changes too.
Sure.
And so it's, you know, you're on a moving train. It's hard to see what's changing around you. But the fact is, we do live in a time of tremendous change. And I think, you know, one of the things I predict at the end of my book is that same-sex marriage will be legal in the United States in the next few decades, and people will eventually forget that it ever was illegal. Doesn't mean that homophobia is going to go away, just the way racism hasn't gone away. But people will forget. The young people, you know, raised 50 years from now will forget that there ever was a time in the United States when same-sex couples couldn't get married, because it just seems so obvious that they should have that right.
Mm-hmm. And there's a certain religious side of our society that has really played that. As a matter of fact, there was a theory that one of the ways George Bush got reselected in the 2004 election was that voters in the South, predominantly African American, were called, cold called, by, they didn't even know who, people telling them, you know, if Kerry gets in, he's going to outlaw the Bible, and gays are going to be able to get married in your church.
There's always going to be some resistance. And what's interesting is that there's quite a few religious communities, not the Southern Baptist or the Catholic Church, but there's quite a few religious communities that openly accept same-sex marriage. So it's not as if the religious groups are uniformly against it. The powerful ones seem to be uniformly against it, but they were uniformly against civil rights too, and they had to adapt.
That's true. That is true. We're talking to Michael Rosenfeld, Assistant Professor of Sociology, and your new book, The Age of Independence, Interracial Unions, Same-Sex Unions, and the Changing American Family, on Harvard Press?
Harvard University Press.
All right. Well, why don't we play some more music for the folks?
Wonderful.
And you brought some beautiful music with you today, some Getz and Gilberto, huh?
Yeah.
Well, let's take a listen to it right now and see what we got.